The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, IOOF Investment Management Limited, IIML, ABN 53006 695 021, AFSL 230524. IIML is the trustee of the IOOF Portfolio Service Superannuation Fund, ABN 7081536918. IIML is part of the Insignia Financial Group, which consists of Insignia Financial Limited, ABN 49100103722, and its related bodies corporate, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to this Ensemble series on rethinking retirement, advice, outcomes and conversations, exploring new IRIS products and opening up the discussion on how to have better conversations with clients about their retirement. My name is Tanya Carlson. I'm the founder and principal advisor at Amplify Wealth Management, a boutique advice firm working closely with professionals and SMEs in the pre-retirement and retirement phase, and I'll be your host. We are going to be joined by experts and advisors in this series. We know that retirement is changing, and advisors really want to hear from other advisors on what they're doing and how they're bringing about these discussions. So let's dive in.
MLC Expand is the super and retirement platform built by advisors for advisors. It's an award-winning wrap designed to unlock potential for you and your clients. Intuitive and easy to use, MLC Expand streamlines advice delivery with simple account creation and powerful transaction capabilities, helping you maximize efficiency while giving your clients access to a comprehensive menu of high-quality investment options and the new innovative retirement income stream solution, MLC Retirement Boost. For more information, visit myexpand.com.au.
Today, we are talking about the next evolution in retirement advice. And we're going to be doing a deep dive into the Retirement Income Covenant and IRIS. I'm joined today by Terry Dillon, CEO of Shadforth, and Ashton Jones, Director of Customer Innovation, MLC. Hi, guys.
Hi, Tanya.
G'day.
Good to be here with you chatting today. So I thought we might start off with a little bit of a deep dive into IRIS or an IRIS 101. Let's talk about what it stands for and how it came about. Ashton, can you shed any light on that for us?
Yeah, I'd love to, Tanya. So IRIS stands for Innovative Retirement Income Solutions, and IRIS as a category is actually something that's been around for quite some time. It came into legislation around the 2017 to 2019 period, but it's taken a little bit of time for the category to start to be part of the platform environment within financial advice. Now, the reason it came about really was there's a significant amount of Australians that are going to retire over the next decade. You're talking about nearly 3 million Australians with $1.2 trillion of superannuation that are going to retire over the next decade. And in that context, the government really wanted to give product providers a lot more flexibility about how they design solutions to meet the needs of older Australians. And the best way to think about IRIS as a product category is it really blends some of the parts of different product categories that already exist in Australia today. So it's almost like a mix of an account-based pension and an annuity.
Yeah.
But the important thing is it also provides some pretty significant age pension benefits for clients that take up the solution. And it's really designed to work to complement those existing solutions and to give financial advisors and Australians more options to create more income in retirement.
Fantastic. I think it's something that is really exciting to see progress in the market today and sort of start to take shape. And we'll talk a little bit today about, you know, how we position this and some of the tips for advisors to sort of start thinking about how it's going to form part of their strategies. But before we do that, I wanted to touch on a couple of things. Firstly, the white paper that's called Riding the Retirement Wave. Let's talk about some of the really interesting findings in that paper, if we can.
Yeah, love to. So Riding the Retirement Wave was something we really put together over the last 12 months. Around 12 months ago, MLC really set out to reimagine how we design retirement solutions for Australians. And we decided to start through our MLC Expand platform. But before we even got to the point of designing a solution, we wanted to make sure we really understood what was happening in Australia, what was happening with retirees, and what that meant for financial advice. And so the whole theme of the white paper is small advice pivots with big impacts. We really wanted to myth bust this idea that providing high quality advice in retirement was really, really complex. You know, there is a lot of complexity associated with financial planning in retirement, and financial planners today do a wonderful job to support clients in both the accumulation phase and the retirement phase. What the white paper really goes through is the sort of macro context that's happening in Australia around retirement. Mm. You've got not just the number of Australians who are retiring, but also people are living longer than ever before. Like the statistics are actually quite dramatic. You're really talking about there being quite a significant probability that a couple retiring today in Australia can live beyond the age of 90, 95. And that's quite unprecedented. And one of the things that we talk about in the white paper is in the context of more Australians retiring, them living longer than ever, and particularly needing to look after retirement income for the household, what can advisors do to make sure they're supporting Australians through that journey?
Yeah.
And the small shifts that we talk about are things such as talking to them earlier about what their retirement entitlements could look like, thinking about bucketing, which is a very common strategy to accumulate retirement savings, thinking about that through the layer of income. Mm. So rather than investment bucketing, income layering.
Okay.
So these small shifts and these small reframes that you can do around your advice proposition to engage clients and also open up more opportunities to generate more income in retirement.
It's a really interesting sort of wording, I guess. The income bucketing, I think, is important. Us advisors get used to our conversation pieces. We all probably talk buckets and layering, etc. But I think thinking income layering is a great context. And we'll certainly come back and follow up with some of those practical tips that advisors can take away. Before we do that, you touched on something that I think is really vital. I know I talk to my clients about this all the time, which is if they want to retire in their 60s, we're potentially funding 30 years and it's a really long time to be poor. So we want to make sure they're thinking about how to make their money last, which terrifies them, right? So let's talk about some of those risks. And Terry, you know, I know you'd like to sort of get into some of the detail, but what do you see as the typical risks that retirees face?
Yeah, maybe just a bit of context, a bit of scene setting. So Shadforth's been around for a long time, 100-odd years.
Yeah.
And whilst we have accumulation clients, we have a disproportionate amount that are retirees or near retirees or retirees. And my team hears me talk all the time about the fact that we're not, yes, we are financial planners, yes, we're wealth managers, but we're actually in the business of making and keeping 50-year promises to clients.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing, right, with
really?
People's money. And so as you pointed out, it is a very long journey. We tend to meet people in their early to mid-40s. They join us as a client and we help them move from that phase of their life to building up enough wealth to retire. We then help them manage the wealth through their retirement, which is, as you said, at least 30 years for most people, and then help them deal with legacy and other issues. So it is a big deal. In fact, we were just talking the other day, our oldest client came to us over 40 years ago.
Wow.
And is today 107 years old.
Wow.
Just gone into aged care recently. Amazing person.
Incredible.
And in fact, through that whole journey, we've serviced her. And two things I would call out from this. her daughter has just become a client in her mid-70s, which is really nice and really interesting. But also, she's done better than we planned and better than she planned with her investments. So markets have been stronger. the superannuation and pension system has been better than any of us predicted. Mm. And of course, her money has lasted well beyond her life expectancy or the average life expectancies.
Mm. And maybe just to pick up on a few things that Terry sort of touched on there, he mentioned the phrase average life expectancy.
Yes.
You know, it's a really important concept to understand. But averages basically mean about 50% of the population lives beyond that average.
Of course.
Yeah. And 50% don't live to that average. And that's a risk, right? If you live longer than you expect, you need your money to last much, much more, much, much longer than maybe you planned. And if you don't live to that age, you need to think about, well, what that's going to mean for your spouse, what that's going to mean for your family. And so that risk associated with longevity is one of the key risks that we're increasingly seeing advisors needing to think about in building those income streams.
I agree with you, but I also think advisors think about it all the time, but clients don't believe they're going to live that long. So there's a regular conversation piece around statistics and how man looks, but you get pushback. I don't want to be here that long, or I don't imagine I will be. So that's a tricky one. I think longevity is a real conversation piece as well.
Mm.
It's one of those things too. The longer you live, the longer you live, right? You start, then the numbers keep going up. So it is one of those conversations.
Compounding.
It is. It is. We're beating the averages.
But, you know, one of the interesting statistics as well is that around 60% of retirement income actually comes from the investment returns that are generated in retirement. Mm. And so to Terry's point around the client story that he shared, you know, one of the things that we always speak to advisors about when we go out and speak to them around retirement is, well, who are your oldest clients, right? Because it's those examples that I think really start to contextualize that people are actually living longer than ever before. And also you need to think about, well, what does a plan look like if it does need to last that long? It doesn't mean that that's your main plan, right? And we find that that actually starts to help to reframe the conversation.
I think that's a great place to start, isn't it? And if we keep bringing it up, that there's a regular conversation, maybe we're breaking down some of those taboos or starting to reality test that with clients. Okay. Apart from longevity risk, let's talk about some of the other risks that clients face and some of the ways maybe to address those as well.
Sure. Probably the most important one is the one Ashton just talked to. People get to retirement and think, oh, now I've retired, I've got to take less risk. And of course, because they've got 30 or 40 years, you need a sensible amount of growth assets or it's not going to work. That's fundamentally the biggest risk that everyone
takes. Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the normal things like inflation. Probably the least understood risk I see out there is sequencing risk. Mm. And that really is if someone retires in 2008, just before the GFC, and happens to have big negative years in the first couple of years of their retirement, but earns a return of 8 or 9% over their full retirement period, 20 or 30 years, and another person retires in 2012 and earns a return of 8 or 9% over their full years, the first person who's had the negative years early will run out of money much earlier than the person who's just been unlucky. They both had good portfolios, both were diversified. One just happened to start that journey before a big downturn. That's a conversation we're having with clients, and often they don't get it at first, and we have to show them and walk them through it and talk them. You know, I call it financial planning for adults.
Yeah.
It is complex. The maths don't always make sense to people, but I do think it's really important. And what we've found is clients appreciate it, spending the time, and they make better decisions about the growth aspects they need to have and the volatility that's going to come with that.
Okay. So does that sort of look like modelling these options for clients? How would you sort of demonstrate that to a client?
Yeah, well, look, if you're fortunate enough to have a Monte Carlo simulation and you can show probability of outcomes, if you're fortunate enough to do that, and many, many advisory groups do that, I think just having the conversation and showing it on the board and showing here's a normal statistical range of returns, 23% minus 8, plus 5, and showing that outcome versus another one will get the idea through people's heads.
Yeah.
And again, I think we can trust people with the truth. Mm. And when people have those facts, they tend to make better informed decisions, and they make better decisions when markets are poor. They don't end up selling good growth assets at the worst time.
Yeah.
They do see the value of the bucketing or the non-risk assets in the portfolio.
What do you think about things like recency bias, given how markets are behaving now. Do you think advisors are having this conversation now, or should they be, given that, you know?
I won't speak for the whole industry. Mm. I know my advisors. The better our clients do, the more I worry.
Yeah.
Because I've been in this for long enough to know that all the good times are followed by more difficult times.
Yeah.
We also have great respect for the fact that markets are normally the best at pricing assets and should probably trust the prices. Mm-hmm. So we're having a lot of conversations with clients at the moment about saying, hey, it has been great. Mm-hmm. You're well ahead of where we thought you would be. If you were ever going to take risk out of your circumstance, the great years you've had have actually allowed you to pull risk out. Mm-hmm. There'll be a cost of that.
Yeah.
But if we do get the inevitable downturn at some stage, you will have sensibly reduced your risk exposure after a really good time. So, I mean, I think the most important thing is you've got to be having the conversations. Yeah. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, when people are in retirement, surely their circumstances get more simple. Do they really need advice? Yes, they do. I see all sorts of disasters from people who don't have advice. And the second thing is, as you're getting older, your financial literacy falls off a cliff.
It's very true, actually. I think that's something we don't talk about enough.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. And I've just gone through, both my parents have gone into aged care. They're both financially literate people. My mum's got dementia. That's a different thing. Mm.
Yeah.
But my dad's ability to pay bills, never mind make good decisions about markets. He has an advisor who I make our business. We charge him full fees. Mm. And all I ask his advisor to do is make sure he's never worried about money and he's not stressing over his age pension or his allocated pension or his IRS. Mm. And that is great value for him. And I just tell one story. My dad gets up every morning and historically and goes down and gets coffee for my mother and himself and gets a free on each and gets the paper.
Yum.
Our premium advice fees that he pays are half what he spends on those coffees.
Yeah.
And it means that when he speaks to me and he speaks to my wife or the kids, he's asking us how we are and how the kids are going. He's not worried about money. So, you know, I'm a big advocate for your need for advice is not linked to your complex work situation. Mm. Actually, as you get older, you're more vulnerable to scams. Your ability to process things is much more difficult. And we're big advocates that you need advice all the way through, even if it changes in its focus.
Sure. And I think that's true too. I think it's really important to hold that discussion. I know I've had many clients tell me that they're looking forward to retirement because they'll have more time to manage their affairs and their, you know, busy CEOs and all those sorts of things. And what often happens is the minute they stop, it's almost like that part of the brain just switches off and they lose interest. It's not so much that they can't do it. It's they're busy spending time with grandchildren. Their focus and their purpose shifts away from all these balls in the air that we typically sort of juggle and sort of try and maintain. So it is about talking to them about what that could look like. And that's what our role is as advisors, is to sort of help take on the ability to manage those things for them on their behalf.
Well, I think you're touching on a really important point, Tanya, when it comes to risk. So the actual psychological risks of retirement are one of the actual main factors that drives different behaviours, both in the lead up to retirement and also once you're in retirement. You know, you touched on purpose and identity. That is something that is really central to not just the planning conversation in retirement. It also drives a lot of the decisions that people make once they're no longer working or once they're thinking about no longer working. And our white paper touches a little bit on this as well.
Okay.
The risk around confidence and how confidence affects people's decisions, both in the lead up to retirement and once they're in retirement. Having a financial plan for retirement is one of the biggest drivers of confidence. You know, that's really, I think, one of the reasons why financial advice is so powerful, making people feel like they've got a plan, making people feel like they've got a sense of control, making people feel like someone's looking out for them, right?
Agree.
It's quite transformative. But even clients that have a financial advisor, the statistics indicate that most Australians do not feel confident about their retirement. And advised Australians feel much more confident. Yeah. Around 62% of them feel confident about their retirement. But because there's so many different factors at play, you know, how advisors, as Terry touched on, engage them not just on their financial needs, but also on their emotional needs
yeah.
is something that we're seeing is quite a profound opportunity right now.
It really is. And it can be interesting with how clients take that on, because I think clients think they're coming to us for a specific type of advice, and they get a sometimes they'll say to me, oh, I didn't realize this was a counseling session. It's important that we have these conversations because we know your behaviors and your mindset is going to shift or perhaps require some work, a more challenging conversation to have. But I think confidence is really key, isn't it? If we want our clients' money to last 30 years or more, their lifetime, they need to have confidence that it can do that in good times and bad, in different market cycles, and all those ups and downs that we go through doesn't stop once you retire.
No. And look, we insist, and we have a deep belief that every time we see clients for a progress meeting, we measure their future cash flows and whether how their funds are going against all the objectives that we've set for them. Because people value measuring progress, even if we're fortunate enough, a lot of our clients are very comfortable. It's a bit of a misnomer that perhaps they don't need lifetime cash flow modeling. People with lots of money have bigger objectives. They've got used to spending a lot of money and they want to leave it to people. So you do that every time, and it helps people to feel confident. And I often see people coming in and they're a bit worried. Perhaps President Trump said something crazy, or AI is a worry. And I see them coming in to see their advisor, and then I'm fortunate enough as a CEO to end up in the lift with them on the way down and say, oh, how's it going? Is Jamie looking after you well, or have you got any feedback? And they're genuinely so happy and at ease after speaking with their advisor, because they've gone through those basic steps again, got the comfort their money will last, got the comfort that someone's thinking about the issues that perhaps they're not in a position to.
Yeah.
So again, I am obviously a huge advocate for advice generally, but I see it every day, and it's real.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the confidence piece is key, and it's something that is a bit misunderstood by clients, perhaps not necessarily by advisors. And those other behavioural issues that we see, people, I guess, can become concerned, and we might sort of pivot a little bit to start talking about some of these IRIS products and the way that they work, because I think there is still some, lack of information for advice advisors.
Before Ashton jumps in, he should speak to this because he is the expert. I can tell you that until a very short period of time ago, even our best advisors only had a working knowledge of what they were and how they work, because there's not a lot of them. But Ashton, tell me.
Yeah. Well, the category's come a long way. I think it's probably the main headline.
Yeah.
And it's come a long way, particularly over the last 12 to 18 months. Mm. So it was one of those categories where there was a lot of interest in it initially when the legislation came out. But like a lot of things that are new and are different, until it really starts to become part of the mainstream financial planning ecosystem, it's quite difficult for advisors to implement these solutions historically in a way where they can actually manage it effectively for clients over the long term. Mm. But what you've seen over the last 12 and 18 months in particular is more of these solutions now becoming available within the platform ecosystem.
Yeah.
And really that's allowing advisors to implement these strategies much more effectively for their clients. But, a couple of things I think are really important to understand about these solutions is they're actually really, really quite easy to implement during the savings phase of super. So you've got a number of solutions now in the market, MLC Retirement Boost included, where actually switching these solutions on for clients is as simple as making an election on their superannuation account.
Mm-hmm.
And by making that election, what it does is it starts to build up quite a powerful potential benefit in the background for clients. What it's doing effectively is it's saying, I'm a client who is considering taking up a lifetime income solution once I retire. And by making that election, it starts to build up this really powerful potential benefit in the background, which is a concessional purchase amount for a lifetime income stream. Now, advisors know that for a lot of clients, being able to maximize their entitlements in retirement is quite emotionally important. Like, people really want to know they've worked hard their whole life.
I pay taxes all my life. My dollar of
it. I want to make sure that at some point I can benefit from the government healthcare card. I want to be able to get my discounted pharmaceuticals. I want to feel like I've got that support in place. And then the other thing is it's really about giving more options. So switching it on at that point is not locking you into any particular decision at retirement, but it means that you've got more options to actually layer in income once the client retires.
Right.
And in particular, the way in which these solutions work once you get into the retirement phase is you can actually continue to invest the client's money in the same investment menu that you have today on platform, the same super and pension investment menu.
Right.
So you both get the benefits of that age pension concession, as well as a layer of income that is designed to generate income for life, but importantly, still access and exposure to markets through the platform investment menu. So it's really those three things together, working together, that can start to open up a range of new planning possibilities. And the headline that we sort of talk about in the white paper, and also as we're talking about these solutions in market, is our modeling and also independent modeling indicates that it can generate up to 60% more income in retirement.
And that's just enormous.
That's 60%, huge. It's a huge opportunity, right? Like if we were talking about 60% higher investment returns, people would fall over themselves to look at the strategy.
Yes.
And it's, you know, I think it's those two things. One, the client opportunity is significant, but also two, it's much more easier to implement these solutions and to think about doing that much earlier in the planning journey.
And so the benefit of doing it earlier is that you're locking in some sort of...
Yeah.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So we get this question quite a bit, right? So the way that the legislation works today for innovative retirement income streams, it's for those that are interested, it's section 106A of CIS, is you're allowed to actually designate an account as an innovative retirement income stream whilst they're still saving for retirement.
Right.
And by making that designation, all it's basically doing is it's saying, I really am going to consider taking up a retirement income stream when I retire. And in the background, we start to run a calculation, which is basically, well, what's your purchase amount going to be when you retire? And these solutions have a purchase amount which is typically lower than their account balance because what the government basically is saying is we're going to grant you some concessions by going into solution where we have confidence that you're going to withdraw that income for your spending needs over time. And so the benefit that they start to build up in the savings phase is really the difference between their account balance and that purchase amount. Mm-hmm. And that purchase amount is really a methodology which calculates their investment returns less their deemed income rate for Social Security purposes.
Okay.
And the deemed income rate is, over the long term, a much lower amount than
what investment earnings.
Most advisors would be targeting for investment earnings. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's about 2.75%. That will slowly go up to 3.5%. But even at that level, there's still quite a significant difference there between the investment returns you'd expect to earn over the long term and what the deemed amount is.
Yeah, and from a practical perspective, not as technical as Ashton, be able to answer all the technical questions, think about your accumulation balance growing as fast as it would under any circumstance. Mm-hmm. You've still got the great outcome that you're expecting. But only a portion of that balance doesn't count for the assessment of the age pension.
Right.
And you've still got the same amount of money
as
you would have had if everything went right.
Mm.
All you've got is the opportunity to flick it into a pension phase IRIS, and then you will get a higher age pension. Or if you choose not to, you don't have to, right?
That's right. You're not locked in.
It's an option for clients. But the earlier the conversation, the better the outcome.
Correct. That's right. So the earlier you start, the more you can potentially benefit.
Right.
And for most advisors speaking to their clients, what really has resonated is this concept of maximizing your entitlements and maximizing your options, right? You know, if we start that early, it means you're really maximizing your opportunity to benefit from those concessions. Mm-hmm. And you're also maximizing the different options you have at retirement.
Yes.
And you still have the choice not to take up the solution.
Yeah.
And really importantly, at least for MLC solution, there's no fees for activating the solution in that savings phase.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. So it's sort of risk-free for the client.
Correct. That's right.
Is there a sweet spot? I mean, does it suit a particular type of client?
Yeah. So... The solutions like this can add pretty significant value for a whole range of different clients, right? If you're talking specifically about the sweet spot from a age pension entitlements perspective, you know, typically you would be looking at clients that when they retire have most of their savings either in super inside the family home.
Yeah.
Those clients are what we kind of call mass affluent clients.
Yes.
They strongly benefit from these types of solutions because they effectively can immediately generate significant additional age pension entitlements. Mm. But the solutions can actually benefit a whole range of different client scenarios. Like Terry and I were talking about this on the way down. You know, the client that Terry was talking about, her daughter, she was in her late 70s. Mm. And a scenario that we are often seeing is when you have a couple and one member of the couple passes away, the remaining member of the couple will be assessed differently for Centrelink purposes.
Yes.
You go from being subject to the couple's threshold to the individual threshold, and often they might lose their age pension entitlements and their government healthcare card and those other entitlements. So putting in place just a small allocation to an IRIS at that point in time gives them that continuity of access to those entitlements and services. So
okay.
Works for a whole range of different client scenarios, but, you know, it works really, really powerfully for those mass affluent clients in particular. Mm.
And what about the higher net worth clients? Because I think that they're just as interested in making their money work, you know, in the most efficient way it can and optimize all solutions. Is there an impact on the estate? How does that look?
Yeah, so there is for all IRIS solutions, these are really the rules, I suppose, that a government puts in place, right? They're not going to offer such generous age pension concessions without there being some sort of consideration or trade-off.
Of course.
And so as clients get older, as they start to move from sort of age 67 into their mid-70s,
yes.
There is a rule which is called the capital access rules, which starts to restrict the amount that you can withdraw from a IRIS.
Yes.
That's the same rule for all IRISs, but some IRISs, including the solutions that we offer, have a number of different features that actually give you quite a lot of access to capital in that early phase of retirement.
Right.
So these days, what a lot of these solutions offer is spouse options. Mm-hmm. So the income will continue in full to the spouse.
Yes.
And also death and exit benefits as well. We, in particular, offer an option which we call a money-back guarantee, which means that the customer has confidence they will at least get the original capital that they put into the IRIS back if they do pass away early.
Yeah.
But it is a trade-off, right? And when we talk to advisors, we really talk to them about considering IRIS as a sort of one tool in the toolkit.
Yes.
It's there for a purpose. That purpose is it can generate great age pension outcomes. Mm. It can deliver income for life. There are trade-offs with that. And so if your client really, really cares a lot about access to capital, making sure they've still got a significant allocation to account-based pension. But if they care much more about having that confidence to spend, knowing what their income is going to look like today, tomorrow, and the long term,
yes,
and having part of the solution being an IRIS is quite powerful.
Yeah, so that comes back to our layering sort of conversation, and I guess the advisor's role in determining, you know, if they've worked with a client for a long time, they've probably got a better understanding of where those clients' concerns are, whether they're overt or covert, and then it's a matter of maybe opening up those discussion pieces and you know, talking to them about some of these solutions.
Yeah, the other thing I don't think we talk about it enough is if you have access potentially to a higher age pension, and given the security that gives you from the government, it actually does allow you to take more growth assets with your investments. Now, if you factor in the extra returns you can get from holding systemically higher growth assets, you get a benefit again over and above the extra age pension.
Yeah.
And that's something that clients really, because the you know, if we really understand, if you have certainty over the age pension part, then people can handle more volatility with the growth part.
Mm. Yeah.
And not everyone will, but it's a really important conversation
that's
to have with clients.
So the layering isn't just in the sort of solutions, it's also in their risk profiling and what each layer might do And then obviously that's within right. the client's comfort levels.
Yes. And Terry's example is also a great example around how putting in place an IRIS or having more confidence about how much age pension you can access.
Yeah.
Also allows you to think about what your drawdown rate is on the account-based pension. Because if you're getting more income from the age pension and you're getting that income earlier, you don't need to take as much income out of your account-based pension to afford the same sort of lifestyle
correct.
In the early phase of retirement. And so that can continue to compound,
yeah.
yep.
continue to generate investment returns and actually extend the profile of the account-based pension as well.
Yeah, fantastic. We talked a little bit before about sequencing risk, and I was just thinking a little bit about that process that you talked about in terms of having the conversation earlier in accumulation phase, getting people to think about whether they want to tick that box to make that election. Obviously, it's not crystallized yet. It's just saying, I may want to. So we start at sort of, I guess, a ticking clock. Is there any sequencing risk in that example where does it protect that part of the balance for the client so that we've ticked that box, we're not sure if we're going to commence the IRIS, but we've said we're interested? Does that layer of their accumulation phase become a little bit protected from sequencing risk, or it's still invested in the same way?
Yeah, no, really important to understand that ticking the box doesn't change at all
okay.
the sort of investment profile of their account. It really is, as you sort of touched on earlier, Tanya, it really is a bit of a no regrets move for clients. In terms of the actual ways in which you manage and mitigate sequencing risk, all of the tools that advisors have today available in their toolkit for an account-based pension can operate the same way over IRISs as well. So same investment menu across the IRIS and across the account-based pension. So you can put in place whatever investment strategies you want today
yeah.
to manage that sequencing risk.
Okay, fantastic. I think something that gets talked about a little bit when we're talking with our clients about some of these options is that sort of idea of locking money away. And some clients get really uncomfortable, even when we're talking about a layer. And we can obviously talk about how small that layer could be. Perhaps it's just covering the regular quarterly bills that come in. So it might be $10,000, $12,000 a year. But we still have a concern. How do you help clients get comfortable with that sort of allocation of funds, do you think?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing to say is it's a free option, right? If you tick the box for the IRIS, you've got your whole accumulation phase where you have given yourself the opportunity to get a big benefit, but you don't have to take it. I think at the point of retirement when you're going to make the call, am I going to start this thing? Then the advisor will have to walk you through these are the pros and these are the cons, and does this make sense for you? And are the benefits so far in front of any of the drawbacks that there might be, that it's a no-brainer to do it. Again, it's a new, we haven't had people who've been in them for 30 years
that's
yet
right.
and yeah. seen this, but my expectation is that no one who gets into, who ticks the box because there's no cost will regret doing that. And the question is how many people will actually move into an IRIS and what proportion of their retirement benefit will it make sense to do? That's still sort of to be determined.
Yeah.
But can I just, as an advisor, we were always looking for ways to add value to clients. The ability to bring something to them that says, look, if this works, it might add 40 to 60% to your retirement income. We don't have to use it.
Yeah.
That is really powerful. Yeah. And that's what my experience is. Clients probably come to advisors for relationship and trust and all of those things, but they're also looking for what are you bringing
yes,
to this
right.
to demonstrate value. And for advisors, this is a great way to demonstrate value. Now, maybe when in 10 years' time, when everyone has one, it'll still be valuable, but less seen as value. Right now, the feedback I've had from the advisors is they really like the fact that it's a no cost. There's no downside yeah. to starting this for a client, and there's a lot of upside for them down the track.
That's true. I think that's a great place to start. Let's talk a little bit now about the differences between traditional annuities
yes.
and IRIS products, because I think that does confuse some advisors out there.
Yeah. So traditionally annuities as a category had a couple of really key differences to IRISs. First of all is today most annuity solutions are not well integrated into the platform environment, right? So in order to allocate a client into an annuity, it does require you to typically roll the money out to an annuity provider. The second sort of key difference with annuities versus IRAs is most annuities, again, do not have a significant amount of flexibility in terms of how you manage the underlying assets. So you really don't get to see what the underlying assets are invested in. Advisors don't necessarily have control over that underlying investment strategy. The other thing, though, to know about the differences between an IRAS and an annuity is IRAS have these really interesting additional phases available in retirement. So the one that's really interesting is once you actually commence a pension phase IRAS, you can choose to defer income. So you don't actually have to take out any income from the pension phase once you commence it. And that can be a really powerful strategy for certain clients. So effectively, you're in the tax-free phase of super and you can keep investing and contributing into a pension phase account.
Wow.
That's a pretty interesting new opportunity available for clients and advisors. The other thing is it's not subject to the same minimum drawdown rules. So you don't have to take out a certain amount each year. So you have more flexibility.
Yeah.
And then once you actually commence the income phase of an IRAS, so once it actually starts paying an income, it doesn't have the same fixed level of income as an annuity.
Mm.
The income is dependent still on market performance.
Okay.
But you know for a fact that it's going to last as long as you do because there is a guarantee that that money will not run out.
Yeah, fantastic.
So it's, again, you know, coming back to what I said earlier, the best way to think about an IRAS is it blends the best parts of an annuity with the best parts of an account-based pension. Yeah. And it is another tool in the toolkit to create new ways to generate more income for clients.
Is there any benefits when a client does defer their commencement of that income?
Yeah, so the really key benefit is during that deferral phase, you can continue to contribute into the account.
Mm.
So you can continue to contribute into the super environment.
Yeah.
But those contributions and the investment returns on those contributions are in the tax-free phase of the system. A really powerful potential benefit for certain clients, particularly if you think about today, more and more Australians are not retiring at a point in time.
Yes.
They have these different phases, right?
And that's so right.
The way I kind of like to describe these different phases of an IRAS, like ticking the box in the super phase is almost like turbocharging your account. The deferral phase is kind of like revving the engine a bit, still in the tax-free environment now. And then the income phase is kind of putting it into cruise control, right? So because you know that you're going to get this really reliable set of income for life from that income phase account. So that's the way I kind of like to
think about it. Yeah, I like that. I think that's simple, contextual for advisors and clients. So, I mean, I guess from both of you, what are the opportunities for financial advisors now? What do you think this is going to bring?
Well, look, it's obviously a very good time to be a financial advisor. There's not enough of us and there's so many people hitting retirement and needing help that broadly speaking, I know this is our business. I'm sure it's other people listening to this. We've never been busier. Mm-hmm. And our problem is actually getting through the work and making sure we can help enough people. But I'm really excited about the extra tools we get through products like IRAS to solve some of those problems. Again, it's not our biggest problem. At the moment, our biggest problem is actually getting through the work and dealing with it. But I love when we have an extra tool in the toolkit, something else that can help people. It helps us to demonstrate value. It helps us to bring something to the client that they wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
So I think that's a huge opportunity. And ultimately anything that means people's money is going to last longer and they're going to have better outcomes has got to be a good
thing. So it's a good conversation.
Yeah. It is.
100%. And I think the two things for me would be number one, confidence. Mm. We touched on it at the start. There is still a confidence crisis in Australia and the role that advisors can play to create more confidence, I think is such a wonderful opportunity for that industry. And then the second thing I would say is that level of additional income that clients can potentially benefit from. Like, it's a really meaningful, it's quite transformative, I think, for some people's lives.
Well, it's a big impact. We can't ignore that.
Exactly right. So I think it's those two things. And then, you know, to Terry's point, right, advisors have a bucket load on their plate, right?
Yeah.
I think now just taking a good look at what the platforms now offer, because it's much easier to implement these strategies and it doesn't have anywhere near the complexity of managing these things off platform, which has, I think, been a bit of a barrier in the past.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think I really like the idea that it blends behavioral issues and emotional things that clients are concerned about, like you said, about confidence and even just some of their own biases that they're not necessarily aware of, but advisors are generally pretty in tune with
it. Right, yeah.
We watch those behaviors, we see them each year, and we sort of have a little chat about them, but sometimes it's difficult to bring it up. So this is one way to be able to sort of bring in a product that encompasses both investment and behavior.
And I think this whole idea of what the industry can do to help clients visualize their retirement.
Yeah.
So, you know, as part of rolling out our solutions, we created a center of excellence for our advisors through MLC, and that is all about helping them to visualize the way in which these solutions can impact their retirement.
I'd even go one step further. Rather than thinking about super as super and just an accumulation thing, for young people that tend not to be our clients, funny enough, in Shadforce, for dealing with older people, but having a conversation with them where they say super into retirement as one thing, and you can actually say, no, this is not 12% of your income going into an account you're never going to be able to see or use. This money is going to produce this much income, which will replace your need to work. Having that conversation early.
It's a great point.
Yeah, I think that is, that's
going to be really important. Well, that appeals to the younger ones. And anyone who's sat in front of a younger client, they're like, when can I retire? Yes, they want it to be in their 50s earlier, which obviously super has some restrictions around, but again, that layering approach to, well, this is going to be part of your money here and where your income comes from here. And at this phase, if you are retiring before 60, we've got these other assets supporting that, but it still goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Yes.
Wonderful. I think it's been a great discussion. Really looking forward to this series because I think it is an area where advisors are lacking a little bit of knowledge and confidence themselves to be able to have these conversations with our clients. I keep having a visual in my mind where you say irises of sort of this flock of birds, thinking of ibises, but I think it's a great conversation to start having with our clients. And like you say, Terry, bringing in some new discussion pieces so that we're showing our clients what is available to them and how we can bring solutions to the table. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tanya.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great.